Thirsty for more Sherlock Holmes mysteries? Want some audio CDs on the subject? Thrilling over the fact we need not confine ourselves to 60 stories? Ecstatic over new tales of the great detective and the good doctor? You need only visit wessexpress.com to discover wonderful pastiche titles, and please also support their outstanding scholarly works as they fill many a canonical nook and cranny.
Dr. Ainstreet is an expert in coolie diseases from Sumatra, which implies he may be of Dutch parentage. Horribly contagious contagions, Tanpanuli fever, and Black Formosa corruption. To date, no one save Dr. Ainstreet knows what a corruption is, medically speaking. We are grateful for his sponsorship and wish him luck in wiping the floor with Sir Jasper Meek and Penrose Fisher.
Ever since the inception of the Baker Street Journal in 1946, it has been the gold standard for Sherlockian criticism, playing the game, articles on Holmes-related Victoriana, and the occasional cheeky essay. To boot, the folks running the show are great friends of the Babes. To learn more, you need only visit www.bakerstreetjournal.com.
You can find us online on our website called bakerstreetbabes.com. We're also on several social media platforms like Twitter, where we are BakerSTBabes as one word. On Facebook, our page is called Baker Street Babes. And we're also on Tumblr under bakerstreetbabes.tumblr.com.
Oh, they call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street Babes always leave the rest of them behind. Oh, so when Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two-two-one?
Hello and welcome once again to the Baker Street Babes podcast. I'm Artie, and with me today are Maria, Lindsay, and Amy. Our topic is, we're going to talk about Mrs. Hudson today. Jumping off from a suggestion from the very awesome Lindsay, we're going to start this chronologically with Mrs. Hudson in the ACD canon. Lindsay, do you want to make a start?
To be honest with you, Mrs. Hudson in the ACD canon, so many people, when we've had them as guests on the podcast, when we've said, who's your favorite canonical character, almost always it's going to be either Sherlock Holmes or John Watson. But inevitably, when we get to the question, who do you want to sit down and have a cream tea with, it's Mrs. Hudson. Because she had all the dirt. This lady, she just, to put up with these ridiculous men for as long as she did, and I think that in the ACD canon, she's fleshed out a little bit more than we might even expect. You first encounter her in A Study in Scarlet, when they take rooms together, but there are other canonical cases that I think really just make a great case for her being a huge badass. Does anyone want to chat about her role in The Empty House, for instance? I mean...
Well, there's this miniature. This miniature of a scene from The Empty House, which you can buy, apparently, to, like, put in your dollhouse or something. And it's really funny because Mrs. Hudson is kneeling in front of Sherlock Holmes. I mean, obviously, it's the fake one, but it's just a really interesting thing that has been produced, that is out there. We might actually put a picture of that under this podcast on the website.
Oh, we should.
Just for your amusement. No, but she's being absolutely amazing because, first of all, she's the one who takes care all of Sherlock's things while he's gone for the 3 years. And then she actually risks her life crawling around the floor and tanning the bust of Sherlock Holmes or the wax figure of Sherlock Holmes. So Sebastian Moran thinks that it's actually Sherlock Holmes in that flat when he is going to definitely shoot him. Right? So she's just like moving around on her knee in the living room in 221B Baker Street, and she's waiting for Sebastian Moran to shoot that thing that she's moving. So I think, you know, as far as badass ladies go, she's definitely on top there.
Oh, she's up there. Well, or down there. I love her to pieces, and she, well, canonically speaking, I think my favorite Mrs. Hudson case if you're going to look at one that sort of illuminated her character, explicated it more than it had been really talked about previously, because, you know, she's the landlady and she's the housekeeper and she's endlessly fascinating, I think, but she doesn't get a very active role in a lot of cases. So it's super rewarding when we have that in The Empty House. And then in The Dying Detective.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, God, the beginning of that case. I mean, Amy, do you want to recap that? Well, it becomes quite clear at the beginning of The Dying Detective that she's very fond of Sherlock Holmes, and all sorts of stuff is coming out in the wash at the beginning of this because Sherlock Holmes is dying. It was like a dress rehearsal for Reichenbach.
Oh, the pain, the pain.
Because he's always been this awesome. He decides, yeah, I'm just going to get this tropical disease, and it's going to be super excellent. No one's going to be hurt by it. My landlady will be the messenger to convey to Watson that I am at death's door. The relationship between all three of these people becomes, I think, a lot more clear at the beginning of that case because, you know, she goes to Watson, she says, I'm not supposed to talk to you, but I know I am. He said, if it has to be a doctor, let it be Watson, but I don't really want you to consult anybody. And then, you know, it becomes quite clear that she knows that these people have a really beautiful friendship. She cares about Sherlock Holmes. She doesn't want him to be, you know, in this situation. She trusts Watson to at least try to take care of it. And it all is just this prelude to Waterfall in Switzerland that is totally uncool.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, maybe we should mention that, of course, at that point, Watson is living with his wife, so he's not living with Sherlock Holmes. So that's why he doesn't know that he's dying, and that's why Mrs. Hudson sort of goes and meets him. And of course, I think it's also something else that he starts the story with, saying that Mrs. Hudson sort of lets Sherlock Holmes do whatever the hell he wants to do, and that she respects him so much that she would never say anything about anything he does, right? So it's really, he's really particular about making sure that Mrs. Hudson is, you know, the woman who respects Sherlock Holmes extremely to a motherly extent, that she knows the things he's doing are crazy, but she would never interfere. And then he sort of has her come and talk to him. So it's a really neat introduction. I wish there was more of it in the canon. Mm-hmm.
I was going to comment on both of those together because, like with so many of the stories, what we actually get is so sparse, but what's between the lines is so rich. Mm-hmm. Because what you see her do in both of those cases shows, like you just said, the amount of respect that she has and the trust that she has, and her willingness suggests, like, huge amounts more material than what we actually see that's going on day to day with trust and friendship and things, where she's not just a passive landlady figure. She becomes so involved in their lives that she pops up at these incredibly significant moments and does these really epic things. But it's like, then we don't see her for 10 stories or something, but it's like, we always know. I think the things that we see her doing remind us at these really, really important moments that she's always back there somewhere.
Yeah.
And always an active part, even though we don't always see it.
And I think that's also why she appears so much in adaptations. Like, she's a much more active character in most adaptations, or she appears much more often than she actually does in the stories. And I think that's exactly because we know, you know, she has to be there. She has to be doing things around, like, dusting or bringing tea and doing all those things that we just know she's definitely doing, even though we're not told that she's there. So I think that's definitely part of her character. Like, she's the ghost that's always, always in the background, always working.
Yeah, which is wonderful. And I think that additionally you see that's a reciprocal relationship. I forget which one. I think it's probably at the beginning of The Dying Detective, and correct me like if I'm getting this wrong, but Watson says at a certain point that Sherlock Holmes probably could have just bought the house for once.
I love that part.
Yeah, I love that part so much because he's like, I know there's a lot you have to take on.
And I think like he pays a lot more rent later in the stories or later in time because he just knows how much he owes her. To have that kind of headquarters in London, in the center of London, doing what he's doing and having someone who accepts him in the way that he is. I mean, that's super special.
Yeah.
In straight up Westminster.
That is in The Dying Detective. It's like in the very, very beginning when he's listing all the undesirable characters that she has to put up with and eccentricities.
What a beautiful arc that is, though, because when he meets John Watson initially, these are two friendless people who don't really have enough money to take their own digs by themselves, and they have to go halves with somebody. Sherlock Holmes, because of John Watson's stories in the Strand magazine, has become so famous by the time you get to The Return and you get to cases like The Dying Detective that he is paying princely, I think, sums for the Baker Street rooms entirely on his own. Because, you know, he's made that career, and it's really a neat transition, and Mrs. Hudson was there the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Aww.
My two favorite Baker Street house buying moments are the beginning of The Dying Detective, that one we were just talking about,
yeah,
and the beginning of The Norwood Builder.
The other one.
The beginning of The Norwood Builder, where Watson's like, and then he apparently bought my medical practice.
I could move back in with him.
Which just makes
No comment on that one.
I know.
He wanted a roomie, so he bought my medical practice, but he didn't tell me about it, and I found out about it 9 years later.
Wonderful. Anyway, back to the point. We were talking about Mrs. Hudson in adaptations, and I think one of the reasons why she appears so much is also because there is quite little in the canon, so you can do what you want, and you can have fun with mm-hmm. the parts. And sort of make it your own in whatever adaptation it is. I'm going to start with Granada, obviously, because Granada.
Williams.
Yeah, Rosalie Williams just portrays it so beautifully, and like by the end of the series has become sort of their mum. I think somebody on Twitter commented on that as well and calls them boys occasionally. And they behave like schoolboys as well sometimes. Yeah. Like there's those episodes where Holmes is covered the whole floor in papers because he's researching something, and it's literally in the middle of spring cleaning, and Watson goes, oh, Mrs. Hudson's going to be a bit put out by this. And then later you see her come in and just having an absolute screaming fit. Those are the kinds of things that obviously John Watson would never write about. But if you're doing an adaptation, you can totally put that in there because, yeah, that's life at 2:1B. Like, that's the thing that happens.
Yeah.
And it's a logical extrapolation because is it the beginning of The Glorious God or the Musgrave Ritual where he's going through the trunk where he has to...
Oh, that's the Musgrave Ritual.
Yeah. Musgrave Ritual, yeah. And Watson's like, just put your papers away.
Yeah. He's like, I'm not a very tidy person, but then there's Sherlock Holmes.
He's like, I'm not anal, but this is gross. Throw out your pizza box. Because I have a little consideration. Right? What is in the butter dish, meanwhile? And no one wants to know. No one wants to know what criminal relic ended up in the butter dish. Because clearly it traumatized Watson, so God knows what effect it would have on the rest of humanity if we ever knew what turned up in the butter dish. That was a relic from a criminal case, but... Yeah, Watson's yelling at him because he's messy. It becomes quite easy to extrapolate that Mrs. Hudson would have suffered even more harsh trials on that. Because technically Watson doesn't have to pick up after him, but she does.
She does. And her face says everything. I mean, it's just her facial expressions when she looks at Holmes are so... I mean, she doesn't even have to say anything. It's just the way that she walks into a room, looks at him disapprovingly... And just walks out again. I love the way that she looks at him.
I love the Rosalie Williams bit too, from Empty House. He comes back and throws Mrs. Hudson into violent.
Always a great moment.
Yeah. And then there's just this beautiful little tender moment of Jeremy Brett just kind of patting her on the back.
Yeah. That is true beauty. I could just watch the gif of that forever.
And what I also love about her is that apparently they chose to make her really understand both Sherlock Holmes and John Watson. So I think it's where John Watson isn't there for some reason, so they insert Mycroft. Sherlock Holmes is sort of bitching about Watson, you know, not being there. And she just turns around and goes, you just miss him. Stop being an ass about it.
Yep.
So she understands, like she knows. And in that verse, she really knows how to handle it. It's really cool.
Rosalie Williams, more than any other Mrs. Hudson actress or adaptation, makes me want to write pastiches from her point of view.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, isn't there one episode, I think, where Watson, like, it starts in the barbershop, and the reason why they're in the barbershop is because Watson has taken Holmes out so that Mrs. Hudson can clean up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, yeah, I forgot about that.
Oh, the what? That's a David Burke one. Solitary Cyclist.
Yes, that's the one.
So, Mrs. Hudson in, well, we can't overlook Una.
I think from the perspective of her having a motherly role, that's kind of been kicked into overdrive by BBC Sherlock and adaptations that cast them younger, because that's a more natural dynamic if you have a much older Mrs. Hudson and you have a younger Holmes and Watson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and Brett was 50 when he started with Bohemia and Redheaded League. I mean, he was already 50 years old. So you've got Cumberbatch. He was, what, 34? Yeah. Something like that. When they started BBC Sherlock, which is much closer to canonically how old they would have been.
Right.
It's pretty ridiculously cool that Una Stubbs was acquainted with Cumberbatch from a young age, too.
Yeah, I think that helps the dynamic.
Yeah. It just translates onto the screen quite well.
I love how sassy she is. Even with John Watson, like, she manages to out-sass him, and that's something that you kind of, you have to, you know.
I like that she's gotten progressively sassier, because I think in the beginning, yes, there were kind of those sad moments where you're like, oh, you should include Mrs. Hudson, and then later on she's like this amazing force to be reckoned with.
Yeah. Well, the risking her life thing, I mean, that's, I think, sort of the equivalent to the empty house happens in
Scandal
in Graveyard, when she's hiding the phone in her bra. And of course she's sort of risking her life, because, you know, you don't know whether the CIA guy is going to kill her or not. So that's, I think, something where she's still vulnerable and sort of, you want to protect her, but I mean, she's badass in that as well.
I don't know, I feel like sometimes female characters on that show just get cranked up to 11 with no sense really made out of it. But the backstory for Mrs. Hudson specifically, having been married to a drug dealer and an exotic.
I only did the typing.
I know. It's kind of like, okay, wait a second. So you're not just the mother figure. You are somebody who has something of an interesting, dare I say, colorful past. Which is very cool, I think. And for her, it really works.
And it helps her being tolerant, I think. Makes sense. Like, it makes sense that she, you know, she doesn't appreciate Sherlock shooting at the wall, but she's okay with it somehow.
Yeah.
You know, she sort of pays for it in one way or another.
Well, you also get the sense of, you know, whatever happens, at least it's not as bad as whatever happened when she was still married to Mr. Hudson. Like, once that backstory came out, I was like, oh my God, so she has actually seen the worst. Now this all makes sense. So I really like that, because you could have easily had an older woman who was a bit put upon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after the first series of the show, I think it could very easily have gone that way if they'd decided to do that or been lazy enough to do it, but they didn't.
Right.
And I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, they planted the tiny little seed in the first episode where he sent her husband to his death, essentially. He ensured that he was executed, which was just this tiny little, almost throwaway line for the sake of having a cool throwaway line, and the fact that they expanded it later, like, yeah.
Well, and
rock on.
And the fact that it was in Florida, which is where I live, and yeah, there are a lot of drug dealers, it totally works. Just putting that out there.
He was like, BT-dub, true facts. I've met like 9 of Mrs. Hudson's ex-husbands.
Yeah. And I just love the way that she treats Micro, because she's just...
Oh, totally.
She has no respect for him at all. And it's really funny.
Wait a second, I have a question. Between Mrs. Hudson and John, who has fewer fucks to give for microphones?
It's a tie.
John occasionally has to give a fuck because he gets abducted, but yeah, so I'd say Mrs. Hudson wins this one.
Yeah. She has not yet, or she has, she, well, we don't know what's gonna happen, but, she has yet to be taken away in a car.
Well, you can't just drive up to Mrs. Hudson and say, hey, get in. Mrs. Hudson would be like,
girl, that doesn't work.
Mrs. Hudson would be like, how about no?
And it would probably only be because Michael needs some, you know, help with colors. Please get in the car.
Oh, that's, okay, that is one of my favorite moments, is her with Lestrade, yeah.
He's just standing there and like, he gives her the time, it's amazing. He's so patient with everyone.
He really is. So cute. Those are a couple of extremes though, because you have in Great Games specifically, when she's letting him into 221C, there's that moment where they just shut the door on her and like, no one cares. It's like, Mrs. Hudson's still talking, and then she's just like, oh, I guess I'll go now.
Yeah, true.
So, like, she doesn't have a lot of agency in some of the scenes during that particular episode, but then at other moments she really does, and, you know, it's interesting because there's a wide range there.
I really like that because I feel like it gives her a lot of complexity because it leads you to ask, at what points does she not have agency and at what points is she allowing herself to appear vulnerable or appear less vulnerable depending on what her goal is in the situation?
Definitely. And it's super rewarding when you see in Belgravia exactly how Sherlock Holmes feels about Mrs. Hudson being tied to a chair.
Yeah.
He doesn't feel positive about that.
Just an understatement.
God, just the Sherlock death glare. Like, he sees those nail marks on the wallpaper. And when he looks up the stairs, it's like, if looks could maim, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I love, like, the solution to the whole scene when Mrs. Hudson's definitely only worried about her bittens and nothing else. Mm-hmm. Like, she knows a man just fell out of this window. Well, I say fell. But she's just worried about her bittens. I love that scene. Like, after everything, like, Don Watson taking care of her and disinfecting her wound. She's just like, oh, no.
My bins.
It's amazing. Like, it just shows her character. If she got drunk, she would make the worst jokes.
Oh, God. Yeah, worse than Molly. She'd be up there.
Yeah.
The coolest thing, too, is that all those little domestic touches, like those tiny scenes where you have Sherlock just going into her refrigerator because reasons, you know, like, I'm just going to eat whatever you have in here. And then the scene, I think particularly of the very beginning of The Empty Hearse, where John goes to visit her and she's just like, fuck you, man.
Yeah, oh, God, yes.
You forgot me and I am not okay with it. She just gives him, like, aggressively wrong tea. All of it is super satisfying because these moments that you have in Mrs. Hudson's, in 221A, it's great because you get to sort of see parts of these people's lives that you wouldn't ordinarily, it makes everybody more three-dimensional.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that she knows, like, what what John Watson's favorite food is. And things. It's just all those little touches that... No, she's just aware, and she's definitely a mother figure. I mean, that's something which definitely works. And I'm just like, I'm wondering about Geraldine James in the Guy Ritchie films because she's so different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's so passive, and I mean, she's there, and she's also not okay with what happens.
She's super angry, though.
Yeah, I mean, she's written Sherlock Holmes off in most of the scenes. Right? She basically begs John Watson to sort of do something, you know, because he's killed the dog again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's what we were talking about before, about that choice of whether you want her to be a humorous put upon character or you want to give her more dimensionality. And I think they kind of went with the more down the line funny portrayal.
I agree with you, Amy, but I would have found it funnier if she wasn't clearly so just rage.
I agree. It's definitely not a nuanced picture. It's like they went, well, we have to have Mrs. Hudson, so.
I have so many questions about that particular Mrs. Hudson, because first of all, like, I was always under the impression that she was an older woman, and then she's not, so I'm like, Guy Ritchie, what's happening? Like, I don't know, maybe somebody who knows more about Victorian England than I do can tell me how sort of likely or realistic that is.
you know as much as we do, but Mrs. Hudson could easily...
You know more.
She could have been widowed at 25.
The Russian series does that as well.
Okay.
You were in the position of owning your own property often. If you had been widowed, you would then rent out rooms in a house that was too big. And that was a perfectly respectable sort of way of making a living. Not necessarily an age attached to it. Could have been a tragedy early on.
Yeah.
I think most people have the expectation of her being older, but it's not like a necessity, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm with Arkin on this one, though, because Geraldine is like, whoa, what happened to you, dude?
Yeah, but then also, if you really dislike your lodgers that much, why don't you just serve the notice and find a new pair? Like, surely there must be people looking for accommodation who are easier than Sherlock Holmes and...
Which is everyone in London.
Essentially.
Well, and this goes back to what you were saying about in BBC Sherlock, giving her a backstory that explains why she's actually okay with some of the more bizarre things that happen. Because you stretch credibility if you make her that angry, but she sort of tolerates the situation for like year after year after year.
And she likes John Watson.
Well, and that's the same solution of the new Russian series, where basically she is like desperately in love with Watson. I don't know if any of you guys have watched that.
No, not yet, no.
She's younger, middle age, and she's got this desperate melodramatic crush on John Watson perpetually, and it's kind of sweet and pitiful.
Headcanon accepted. Which of us does not have a crush on John?
Exactly. It's relatable. It is.
Oh yeah.
Well, in the new Russian series, would that fall more in lines of, I don't know, I think, Amy, you're probably the only one who's seen it so far. Is there particular scenes that are interesting in that adaptation, or?
I'm kind of halfway through it, so I don't know how her story sort of progresses. I wouldn't say I've seen her do anything particularly amazing as an agent in a case. But I do think that they use her feelings for Watson as an excuse for why she does tolerate Holmes, because she does really, really have the sort of rage factor. Some people have pointed out that series does seem to draw from the Robert Downey Jr. films to some extent in some of the ways that they interpret certain characters. And so I do think there's the sort of anger at Holmes balanced by the fact that Watson smooths it over with her and she's kind of carrying the torch, at least as far as I've seen. So she like tolerates it because she's like, maybe this man will look at me one day. It's kind of sweet. I am watching that in subs, and sometimes I leave some room open for maybe that I've misunderstood a cultural something that's happening, or like a dynamic that I'm not 100% grabbing, but that's how it seems to me, is that she's very much the put-upon, slightly younger landlady who lets Holmes stick around just because she's so into Watson.
That is so plausible.
It does really work. I mean, it's extending, but it does work, I think.
Well, I think that one of the biggest splashes, correct me if I'm wrong, in terms of fucking epic Mrs. Hudson casting that has happened in a while was Elementary's version.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Candace Cain.
I think we all fell in love with her, like, immediately. Like, as soon as we knew, that's Miss Hudson, we were just like, yes, thank you.
Correct me if I'm wrong, I think she's tweeted that she is guest starring in another episode for this next season.
I mean, she makes fire and she like cleans up and she orders the books, all because she's allowed to stay there during a snow.
Oh, that's right. She does it like alphabetically, doesn't she?
Yeah. And she knows ancient Greek, which is amazing.
Yeah, she's awesome. It's interesting that they chose to use her just sort of as a guest star in a single episode, as opposed to somebody who is part of the domestic landscape.
Yeah.
That is interesting, yeah.
Well, I think it has to do with Sherlock Holmes being sort of uprooted and not really being at home there. So I think it would have been strange to have Mrs. Hudson, who is so firmly also placed in London, like in the stories, to be there. So I think I really sort of like it more that way, because it seems more like all of the characters are sort of fluctuating in the situation that they're in. Because it's not in London. It makes sense to me, but maybe that's just...
Oh, that's a good point. I agree with that.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way either, but the whole sense of Sherlock Holmes being out of town, as it were, like, he's not in London, he's in New York. So, yeah, that does make sense, that if you're going to have somebody from his London life, it could very easily be a guest star situation as opposed to, like, I live in the brownstone and, you know, yeah, I'm here all the time and I make you crumpets every morning.
Or tea. That's
or tea. I would like more of Candace Kane, I think. Yeah. That's all.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we can all agree on that.
That was the part I was disappointed by. I mean, it was like, yeah, now that you mentioned it, it makes perfect sense that she's guest starring on these very particular episodes. But I was like, why not more?
Yeah.
This keeps occurring to me, so I'm going to say it. I feel like both Mrs. Hudson and Mycroft are characters who appear less than they tend to appear in adaptations.
Mm-hmm.
But arguably, it's more defensible to have Mrs. Hudson around all the time than having Mycroft suddenly pop in every 2 seconds when he's clearly someone who canonically doesn't change his routines unless the world is falling down. I like what they've done with, you know, Mark's portrayal, obviously, but generally, Mrs. Hudson makes more sense as a commonly recurring theme in adaptations.
Well, there's three major ones if we look at it. There's Yergana in adaptations, and I'm guilty of all three.
You too.
You're going to find way more Mycroft than is canonical. You're going to find way more Mrs. Hudson than is canonical, and you're going to find way more Lestrade. Even if he was the best of the Yarders, and six Napoleons notwithstanding, he is overutilized in terms of ratio of people saying, okay, I need a Scotland Yarder. Oh, look, Lestrade.
Like, I want, what's his name? Alec MacDonald. I want him. I want a Scot. We need a Scot.
The best of the Scottish Scotland Yarders.
Yes. There could be jokes.
Was that Valley of Fear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's
yeah.
also one that Sherlock Holmes respects a lot, as is Hopkins in Black Peter. So there's lots of police officers who are sort of respect him, and he respects them back. There's another one whose name I forget. Barnes, probably.
That was Wisteria Lodge, dude, I think.
Isn't that Barnes? No. But anyway, there are lots of police officers or inspectors that Sherlock Holmes actually thinks they do their work properly and they learn from him and they apply his methods.
Yeah.
So I think it's true that Lestrade and Gregson even, I mean, he features a lot in Elementary, not so much in any of the others. But he appears just as much in A Study in Scarlet as Lestrade does, so it's a bit strange.
Oh, definitely.
He sort of survived. The survival of the pit, it was apparently Lestrade.
I think you really put your finger on something there though, Maria, because the reason that those inspectors come back, Bradstreet, that was the one I was trying to think of. The reason those inspectors who are recurring, particularly Lestrade and anyone else really who interacts with Holmes in a good way, but it's often default Lestrade, the reason that these people show up in adaptations maybe more often than they would in the original cases is partly because of the fact there is this mutual respect between Holmes and that individual.
Hmm.
There's this camaraderie, and you've got the identical thing happening with Mrs. Hudson. And
yeah.
I think he really identified something there, because Mrs. Hudson in The Empty House and The Dying Detective has proven herself to be one of these people who Holmes really trusts to, he can delegate with her.
Yeah.
He can trust her not to give the game away. He really, I think there's a profound mutual respect there, and that partly goes a long way toward explaining why she would show up in adaptations so much more often than, you know, another minor character who might be interesting, but with whom there's no real emotional connection.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. And also, she's a good argument against Sherlock Holmes hating women, which I hope that people have sort of passed over that. I feel like I haven't heard a lot of that recently, but that has been an argument about the canon, and I feel like his relationship with Mrs. Hudson kind of denies that in a major way.
Absolutely.
His relationship with every woman denies that.
I agree.
Thank you.
I agree totally.
Yeah.
But yes, absolutely. Because she has this really profound regard for him, and if he was just an embodied asshole, then I don't think that... I mean, she has
only
good...
Only sometimes.
Only at water.
I don't think we've mentioned it yet, but it has to be said in this episode at some point. In BBC Sherlock, we have this amazing line from Sherlock about what happens if Mrs. Hudson leaves Baker Street. Because England falls if that happens. And obviously it's a badass line, and it's funny and all that, but as a statement and as a general sentiment, that's Sherlock Holmes saying, look, this is one of the constants of my universe, and whoever messes with that I'm not okay with that. Like, I really loved that when that was first aired, but I really appreciate it on that level to just say, look, this is one of the things that is just part of how things are supposed to be.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful moment. Thank you for bringing that up, because I loved it when it happened, but if we had skipped it on the podcast, that would have sucked. It was awesome. Artie, do you have other bits and bobs from the third season regarding Mrs. Hudson? Any of them that you think are particularly cool with Una? Because I thought she got some pretty neat kind of conflicted.
Yeah, I
she got conflicted.
The screaming and the frying pan and all of that. That was pretty awesome.
Violent hysterics, right?
Violent hysterics.
Oh, she has a scene with John, I think after the stag night, where she's cooking him breakfast.
Oh, I loved it!
As someone who has been on the world as long as she has, she would know that a person in that state of hangover is in no condition. And she makes him this full English breakfast.
Yep.
And I'm just sitting there, I mean, obviously watching Martin Freeman's face in that scene is just another gift that I could watch for a time.
True.
But just the fact that she kind of goes and does that and probably knows full well that he's not going to be able to eat any of it.
It was so calculated. She made him the full English because she was thinking better out than in. Yeah. She was trying to help. You're welcome.
Yeah, and that's another thing, like, she comes out with these things on occasion where you're just like, Mrs. Hudson, children watching.
I think my favourite line of hers in season 3 is at the wedding, when Sherlock's trying to figure out who the murderer is, and she's like, well, you're a popular choice right now.
Yes, that is a
being like the next victim. That's my favourite thing.
Does anybody have any canonical headcanon for how Mrs. Hudson ended up? So the Married Women's Property Act would have happened early enough that if her husband had died, she would have probably been able to keep the house and become a respectable landlady. But does anybody have like a canonical theory as to what happened there? And why does Mrs. Hudson, she's Mrs. Hudson, she never has kids in any adaptation I've ever seen, and I find that fascinating.
I did write about this with my own headcanon in one of my books. I think it was the second one. I'm actually failing on remembering which of my own books it was in.
Just remember your own stories?
I know, right? Arthur Continuity Doyle. My thought was that she had been married to someone who was kind of employed in like a foreign service role as my excuse for her to be okay with certain odd kinds of things, that her husband had been affiliated with Mycroft in some respect, and that was how she had gotten connected originally. Just that, not a huge amount of fleshing out, but just that she was somebody who had been maybe overseas for a period of time in her younger life, had experiences that made her a little bit attracted to maybe a slightly more dangerous life than just settling down and having really boring lodgers. And just a normal, she had gotten widowed in kind of a normal way, just he had gotten sick and died kind of thing, nothing too dramatic there.
Well, I sometimes, like, I thought that Billy could possibly be her child.
Oh, I like that.
Because, I mean, he's around, like, and he's also, you know, he helps Holmes whenever he, you know, needs his help.
That's
something which I could definitely mention. I mean, it's not mentioned, but it's also not something completely, you know, unthinkable.
I like it.
Additionally, what makes sense about that was that particularly if she just decided to be Mrs. Hudson and change her name from a previous name that she might not have been fond of anymore, if you had a child out of wedlock in Victorian England, you were definitely not okay with the rest of society. So if she happened to have a Billy Wiggins, and then decide that, you know, she was going to be around, but not official? That's not an unheard of scenario.
I like it.
And it would, you know, and that would tie in really nicely with the yellow face.
What?
The secret Holmes code, you heard it here first.
I can't get out of this episode without talking about my least favorite Mrs. Hudson ever to happen. There's got to be a market for it somewhere, but there's this pastiche that is called Sherlock Holmes War of the Worlds.
Oh no.
Oh yes.
That's what it sounds like.
It's exactly what it sounds like, and it's by a gentleman, and I'm sure a scholar, by the name of Manly Wade Wellman. Mr. Wellman decided to write Sherlock Holmes War of the Worlds with space aliens invading, but Mrs. Hudson was like a super hot, like 24-year-old.
Oh, I've heard of this!
And she is sitting on his lap all of the domestic scenes at Baker Street. It's like they're talking about, like, where's Watson? It's like Watson's out making stupid commentary on something, and she's just like, oh, Holmes.
Wow.
I gotta say, like, everybody should ship their ships and fair sailing to you, but I was so grossed out. I have never gotten over it. The 24-year-old, and she, like, specifically, I think, in the pastiche, wears her hair down, which is completely not okay for the time period, and she's just, like, she's just walking around, like, and Holmes is like, if you sit on my lap, I'll feel better. Awesome. So, if you want to read that pastiche, I recommend Sherlock Holmes, War of the Worlds.
That's so horrifying in so many ways.
It sounds like it's something that needs to go on my bad fic shelf, yeah.
This is a printed thing!
Next to killing time.
That is crazy. I just checked something. There are at least 31 different film Mrs. Hudson. I probably skipped a lot of people.
Yeah, Private Life and other...
Well, we've got the Mrs.
Hudson. Oh, I love
Taste of Evil.
And Basil, the master as well. It makes cookies and tea. And then we have Mary Gordon in the Basil Rathbone ones.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of others. There's a whole list of them. Most of them I have not seen. But, that's quite impressive, though. I mean, it sort of makes sense because Sherlock Holmes has been filmed so often that there's very often also Mrs. Hudson. But it's kind of impressive.
It is impressive how few times they've chosen to sort of jettison her as a character. Like, she's seen as so important that she's almost always there at least a little bit.
Yeah.
We learned, interestingly, I think, from Ashley during the last Femme Friday that Beryl Stapleton shows up an enormous amount of times because Hound has been adapted so often, not as many times as Mrs. Hudson, because she is still a front runner. Her, Irene Adler. Mrs. Hudson's more interesting than Irene, though, and I'll say this just in terms of world building. Irene, I love her to pieces. She's perfect. And I mean the canonical version, not the bastardized other version. But Mrs. Hudson has a thread of chronological continuity going.
Very, very true.
You're the same person who has lived through many events with these same people, and you have the opportunity to grow and create a relationship and change. And Irene Adler, as amazing as she is literally special guest star.
Yeah.
And never returns, aside from a sort of glib mention in another one of the adventures right in the intro, and they just, it's a toss-off reference. Like, it doesn't expand her character at all.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's a very specific character, which doesn't give you as much space by any means. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about Mrs. Turner for, like, 2 seconds if we're talking about Mrs. Hudson?
Please.
Yeah.
The character who suddenly appears in Scandal in the canon and maybe is Mrs. Hudson, but we're not really sure.
Could be Mrs. Hudson's cousin.
Yes.
Could be a stranger who wandered into their house.
Could be ACD having an off day.
Could be a relation of James Watson.
I've heard so many explanations. Isn't there one where, like, they say Mrs. Hudson is ill, so Mrs. Turner is taking care of them for, like, the week or something? It's so funny.
Well, the canonically sort of, like, so that makes no sense, right? The whole Mrs. Turner thing. And then the footnotes that I've seen about it, or the annotated commentary, largely concludes that Mrs. Turner was pinch-hitting for Mrs. Hudson.
Yeah.
And had to be somewhere else. Which hilarious regarding BBC Sherlock, where they're just like, oh, Mrs. Turner's got married once, you know?
Yes,
I love
the parallel universe that is happening next
week. I have a headcanon for her. In my books, she's actually the housekeeper at the Sussex Downs cottage.
Oh, Martha. So yeah, Martha. That's Martha.
No, the well, not, name is mentioned. Martha is only mentioned in his last vow.
It's because we're pre-retirement, so Holmes is not there.
But she's.
Yes.
Ah. Gotcha.
And because they know each other, that's why he can meet them.
Exactly. It's my headcanon. I'm sticking to it.
That's nice.
For the moment, at least. I picture Mrs. Hudson being that in the future, but yeah. At the current time, I have Mrs. Turner in that role, which amuses me.
That's cool. No, but I think Martha, who's also very often thought to be Mrs. Hudson, I think she only really, like, by name only appears in his last vow, because that's when she's doing the correspondences for Van Borg. I think she's not mentioned. I don't think we know the name of housekeeper in the Lion's Mane.
Oh, you're right. We don't.
We just know that there is one. But,
you know. Well, there would have to be one. It's not like Sherlock Holmes is going to weigh his own pizza boxes. Come on.
That right there encapsulates why Mrs. Hudson is essential.
They would just die.
These pizza boxes aren't going to throw themselves away.
How does tea happen?
Is the funniest thing about the Mary Russell theory is that Mrs. Hudson is still there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She cannot look at it,
though. Oh, we didn't talk about that. I do like Mrs. Hudson in the Mary Russell series a lot.
I mean, so does John Watson, because he's just comedy Watson, but Mrs. Hudson in that series is just, she's great.
Oh, John's so like Nigel Bruce in that series.
He is.
But I just love the Mrs. Hudson to pieces. I mean, she's perfect.
He's got a young girl to look after, which is probably a nice change from a crotchety old man.
From a crotchety old man who doesn't know what to do with pizza boxes yet.
Precisely.
They show me the art thing.
Yeah, it's really deftly drawn. I mean, she used to have a lot of really warm moments with Mary.
I love, there's one really, it's such a small thing, and I have no idea which one it's in, because I've read them all and it's been a while, but that Mary says something about knitting, and Holmes says something like, you would never do that, and she's like, just because I don't doesn't mean Mrs. Hudson hasn't taught me how, or something like that. And I love the sort of idea that they had these teaching moments where Mrs. Hudson's like, but you might need to know how to do this someday.
What if you had to knit your way off of a ship? If you had to swing hand over hand and you had no rope, but you had yarn. It's true. Then you would need to be able to knit really quickly.
It's useful. One of the many. Also, knitting needles are weapons. I am not allowed to take them on the plane.
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
That is true.
The secret skills of
knitting. Yeah. But in that series, it also makes sense because she stands in for Mary's entire family, because the bits of Mary's family that are still there are not very pleasant.
Yeah.
And her parents are dead, so it's kind of the surrogate mother theme again, which I really, really like.
I love that. And I'm curious, maybe this is like too existential a question to introduce in the Mrs. Hudson episode specifically, but I think it's very relevant to her. When I asked, why are there so few family units existing in the entire Sherlockian canon? Because there aren't that many when you look at them. I mean, Sherlock Holmes probably was born from an egg.
In the country.
And has a brother.
A bigger turnip in the country.
Yeah, and John Watson has a brother who was really suffering and currently deceased, and he doesn't seem to have parents. And you have, you know, these sort of families that turn into families because of the fact that they don't have a nuclear family. They create their own sort of, yeah. I care about you, so we're a new family. It's really interesting because throughout the Sherlockian canon, it seems like that's pretty prevalent, that you don't have the mom, dad, 2.5 kids or whatever.
I'm sure ACD life scholars probably have really great theories on that. It leads me to wonder if it had something to do with his war service and the understanding of the kind of friendships that become more than friendships, that become family through shared you know, traumatic or dangerous experiences, because that's what you're seeing throughout the canon is people going through dangerous and traumatic experiences and forging these relationships that are so enduring and so strong. And I just wonder, you know, people talk about that with like Tolkien's Lord of the Rings and kind of formation of kind of non-traditional families and how that sort of has the connection to war service. And I do wonder if that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
That
makes sense.
I have never thought of it that way, and that is brilliant. So you argue that, like, in the Tolkien universes, say, oh, God, C.S. Lewis does it too.
Yes.
C.S. Lewis does the same thing because they go to hang out with Professor Diggory.
Yeah.
Because yeah. their parents aren't there, and London's being bombed in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. It's when they go to Narnia is when they are without family.
Yeah.
That's badass. Do we have to have, like, a Lord of the Rings, Narnia, Sherlock Holmes?
Fandom, you need to get on that. Sure.
That's a lot of crossover, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
Amy, that was very good commentary.
Oh, thank you. I'm bowing virtually.
I see you.
Super. That was truly excellent.
Finally, Mrs. Hudson, Dreamcast. I don't know if any of us have
Before we do that, can I just quickly, because we've had a couple of questions from Twitter.
Oh, yes. Yes, please.
Yeah, and two of them I think we've covered. There was one from Gio Harry, who said she wanted us to talk about the tendency over the years for her to become Holmes's unofficial mum. I think we've just covered that in great detail. And then there's one from U2 Nurse saying the BBC Hudson backstory makes me so happy, to which we can say, yeah, us too. And then I have one from Laura Maiden 83, who said, I wonder what she thought of Mycroft paying rent for a dead man.
There's a book whose title I forgot, and it's about museum culture in the 19th century. And it argues that Mrs. Hudson becomes the museum's keeper, the museum being obviously to Dombey, while he's gone. So it might just be a thing that Mycroft might have asked her to do, and she's, you know, she knows that the family's a bit weird. So I guess probably to help Mycroft cope, as she thought he was probably mourning the death of his brother. I guess that would make sense in a way. Or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, clearly she goes into violent hysterics, so you're not talking about one of these wink-wink things where she knows the whole time and she's in on it and she's a ninja. Like, clearly she does actually think he's dead by her reaction.
That's a great question, though. And, like, regarding museum culture, that would be a good excuse. If Mycroft were trying to make an argument for his own case and saying, hey, you know, my little brother, he was kind of a big deal. So let's just keep his rooms intact and stuff. I mean, it'd be amazing, right? Okay, so that makes sense, kind of as a justification of it. But what must she have been feeling maintaining the rooms of a person she thought was dead for 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's actually, I have a really, really, really long running BBC Sherlock fan fiction where I just sort of write drabbles about people's internal monologues. And we have such a long wait after Reichenbach that I wrote a lot about Mrs. Hudson's feelings about it, because I do think, you know, the idea that she would be even in the same space, let alone having to care for his things, I can't even imagine. Somebody who obviously has that much motherly affection, it just seems kind of amazingly cruel in a way.
Yeah.
It definitely explains her reaction to John coming around in the empty hearse. Like, how dare you have forgotten that I am here?
Yeah.
Because if you're thinking about her having maintained these rooms the entire time, then yeah, that was a pretty big oversight on John's part in the BBC Sherlock series. Canonically speaking, I mean, whoa, just who knows what was going through her head. But I like the museum explanation, makes sense for an excuse, but like it's pretty hard to to imagine what she would have had to say to herself to, like, mm-hmm. justify keeping, oh yeah, the upstairs is, no, I mean, I've got a renter, sort of, he's a ghost.
Well, that would be a great story, like a one-off about her sort of imagining that he's haunting the rooms or something.
Oh, man.
Oh.
Amy, go write that.
I'll take it under advisement.
Do we have any other questions? I wasn't asking earlier for more of them, but we had them on the email.
Those were just on the email that I got from Christina, which were from Twitter. I've not got anything else on email. No. So I think that's it.
I seriously want to know what everyone's Mrs. Hudson Dreamcast is, though, because I'm curious because I want more of her. So who would you pick? Mary Russell version or canon version?
What, the Mary Russell version?
Maybe like Judy Dench or Maggie Smith.
Judy Dench, I just said that.
Judy Dench, that's perfect.
No, Maggie Smith would be Mrs. Turner.
Yes!
And they would meet for tea.
Oh, I like that. I do like that.
Well, that's settled. That's perfect. Judy Dench is Mrs. Hudson, and Maggie Smith is Mrs. Turner.
High fives all around.
Yes. We win.
Well, and she's friends with Benedict Cumberbatch, so there's a weird sort of degrees of separation there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's because there are only 10 British actors, as you know.
Yes, this is true.
And you know, they've all been in the hour and all that.
Yeah. Oh, this is true.
Anybody, any other ideas?
I feel like 10 years from now, I want Kate Blanchett to play Mrs. Hudson.
Oh, that would be good. Yeah.
Yep.
It'd be sexy.
Yeah, but not sexy in the way of your gross adaptation that you mentioned.
I was going to say.
No, she could pull the 25-year-old one off.
She's not going to play Mrs. Hudson from Sherlock Holmes War of the Worlds. She's going to play actual Mrs. Hudson. That delineation needs to be strong.
I would really like Whoopi Goldberg to play in one way or another.
Oh,
good idea.
That's awesome. I love it.
The Watson and Holmes adaptation. Whoopi Goldberg as Mrs. Hudson.
Mm.
We want it.
It would be exactly the same role she's already done. She's played Mrs. Hudson. She was Guinan.
And, yes. And Morgan Freeman would be my crush.
And most deaf would be Sherlock Holmes. Because most deaf would be the most amazing Sherlock Holmes ever to happen. Seriously. And I'm not even kidding. Wait, who's Tom Austin in this cast?
Ooh, I have one. I totally think Samuel Anderson, who plays Danny Pink in Doctor Who, would be a fantastic
Yes, but he's a Watson already on that show, really.
I think we just cast a really, really good Sherlockian adaptation.
Yep.
Let's pat ourselves on the back. I think we did well there. Okay. Oh, brilliant. That's it for Mrs. Hudson. I think we've done well there.
Yep.
Okay.
Do we still have the Mycroft?
Oh, Mycroft appreciation, you mean?
Yeah.
I think that the reason Chris suggested us do Mrs. Hudson today was because that was the one that was popular on social media when she proposed appreciation episodes.
Yeah,
but I don't think that that's off the table at all.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay, do we have, like, something cool for the ending?
Go read Sherlock Holmes' War of the Worlds. It'll change your life. In a bad way.
I have an idea.
Or go make us a Pixbum or some fan art of your Dreamcast.
Don't that listen to me and never read Sherlock Holmes because it'll hurt your heart. Wait a second. I am actually going to see if I can. Yeah, I might be able to. I mean, if I can quote from it, that's just going to be. Okay, the author. Not only was this published in legit 1975, and I can't think of a cooler year for a book like this to have been published, but his name, I was not even making it up earlier. And did you hear the hesitancy in my tone where I was like, I'm making up this guy's name? No, his name is Manly Wade Wellman. Manly M-A-N-L-Y, Wade.
Oh my gosh.
U-A-D-E, Wellman, W-E.
Not well
double
hung.
Double hockey sticks, M-A-N. Like, Manly Wade Wellman is a person who wrote this super, super good book.
I fear that that has to be a made-up name, but, I mean, the kind of, you'd have to pretty much be Gilderoy Lockhart to make such a name like that.
I'm gonna see if he has a Wikipedia entry. Oh, he so does!
Oh my god.
Yeah, he does. Wow.
Wow.
Okay, so do we have a quote or not?
Not yet.
Long-time resident of North Carolina.
That explains it.
Let me see if the book has an entry.
What's going to be really gratifying for you is that once you do find it and read it, Mrs. Hudson is like a circa 1975 hippie who just is around Baker Street sitting on Sherlock Holmes' lap the entire time. And they talk about aliens invading and they're like, this super sucks. And what I would like to do is cuddle you. But, like, I can't cuddle you because aliens are invading. That is the entire plot of the book.
Oh, I love... Okay, this is, like, the Wikipedia description is that in Wellman's book, Holmes, Watson, and Challenger continually confront and outwit the Martians, undeterred by the invaders' technological superiority. Next paragraph. The story features a romantic relationship between Holmes and his landlady, Mrs. Hudson, of which Watson is oblivious.
Okay.
Watson's like, and the entire time Watson's like, you're fucking, really? there's no registering.
It was like, reprinted in 2009. Really?
Oh my god, we could buy all the remaining copies. And just give them to listeners.
giveaways for the next 10 years.
Yes. And then we'd be like, you're welcome.
You won this. Enjoy. Well, yes, on that note. Well, please do send us your suggestions for your dream cast of Mrs. Hudson.
Yes.
In any version. We'd appreciate that.
We will repost all of those things.
Yay. For sure.
Please also message us if you would like a copy of... But please do not message us if you would prefer not to have a copy, because we think that's most of you. We don't have that kind of time.
All right.
Okay, your MC can no longer breathe, so therefore the podcast has to stop.
This is the end.
It's been lovely talking to you, and listeners, I hope you have fun listening to this. And do send us things and get in touch on social media and all that.
Yes.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye.
If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you too?